How's everyone doing today? Everyone's good. Okay, you're here, and that's the most important thing. And in this series, which we call Heroic Tshuvas, which are important responsa over the course of Jewish history, we address the issue of a person putting his life into danger to save someone else. And I just want to review before we start the shiur, because I think we're scheduled to start in about 2 minutes. So this is, you know, just a little bit of an introduction. We have here a major, major issue about a person putting his life into danger, risking himself for the sake of someone else. This comes up over and over again, especially in contemporary life with all sorts of lifesavers, and somebody is drowning, Rahman al-Itslan, he's in a fire, and you go in there to save him, and you may be putting your life into danger. And as we said, a person doesn't own their own life. You might think, well, it's my life, I own it, I can make my decision. But the halacha doesn't view it that way. There are a couple of considerations that might mitigate here, that might allow you to take a risk. For example, in a case of a mitzvah, we say that shluchei mitzvah einem nizakin, that there's a special metaphysical divine promise to protect those who are involved in a mitzvah. We have a principle called shomer p'sayim Hashem, in which things that are natural and normal as part of the behavior of people in society, God watches over you. But yet, those principles really don't help us. I mean, they help, but they don't really do it, if you know what I mean. Because there's something called Shchiyah Chazeka. Shchiyah Chazeka means that if the possibility, and call it the probability, when I say probability, I mean statistics, I don't mean it's more than 50%, but let's say there's a serious probability of 20% that you might be risking your life, that's called Shchiyah Chazeka. We don't say in those cases, well, he's involved in a mitzvah. You know, we're not fanatical here. We don't believe that there are things above nature and we can rely on those things. We have a principle called Ein Somchin Al Nes. We don't rely on miracles. We have to live our lives the normal way. And I think I mentioned to you in the past that Rabbi Moshe Feinstein himself vacillated on the issue of smoking. You know, initially he thought, Shomer P'sayim Hashem, everybody's smoking, God will protect us. And then he came to the conclusion that it's so Shchiyah Chazeka. Remember the Surgeon General report about the various diseases, heart disease, etc., that are caused by smoking, and he rescinded his original permission. So what is the deal from a halachic perspective about a person putting their life into danger to save someone else? So here we have a very heroic tshuva, literally a landmark tshuva that I mentioned in the past, and I want to reiterate it from the Radbaz. The Radbaz was a responser who answered thousands upon thousands of questions back in Egypt, 5 centuries ago and more. His name is Rabbi David Ibn Zibra. And he claims that he found the Yerushalmi, and based on this Yerushalmi, he wanted to conclude that yes, a person has to put their life into danger and take that risk in order to save someone else from danger. What did he find in the Yerushalmi? The Yerushalmi tells us a story about Rav Ami. Rav Ami was one of the greatest in his generation, if not the greatest, and he was taken captive. Reish Lakish, if you remember, was the tough guy. And he said, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to fight them. And either they'll kill me or I'll kill them. And at the end, he was able to save Rav Ami. Now, from his declaration, you see that Reish Lakish was putting his life into danger. And yet he didn't hesitate to go in there and fight and battle in order to save Rav Ami. So the Kesef Mishnah, Rav Yosef Karo, the author of Shulchan Aruch, he says, because We have a principle called Ein Sofik Motzi Midei Vader. What does that mean? This fellow, in this case it happens to be the great Rav Ami, his life is in definite danger. And if we do nothing, he's going to perish. Your life, if you go in there to try to save him, is going to be a suffix, it's going to be a doubt. Will you be able to survive it? Will you not be able to survive? Right now, you have no danger. Are you allowed to put your life into danger when you're not in danger, but in order to save someone from Vade, from definitely perishing? And the Kesef Mishnah thinks that this, the decision in this case is yours. The halacha gives you license, permission to put your life into danger, but it doesn't obligate you to do so. The Radbaz says no. In such a case, you're obligated to put your life into danger. And the reason for that is because you're not in danger, and even if you take upon yourself a risk, but what is to be gained, to be benefited, to save someone from death, from certain death? Don't put your risk as a consideration and a blockage to save someone whose life is on the line, it's in the balance. Now the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring this down in his codes. So even though Rav Yosef Cairo, in his Kesef Mishnah, which is his commentary on the Rambam, he mentions this Yerushalmi and this issue about possibly allowing someone to take that risk for the benefit of someone who's going to certainly perish, but he doesn't bring it down in the codes. The Rambam doesn't bring it in down in the codes. And the impression you get is that a person is not allowed to take serious risks, period. And that's it, end of quote. There are no exceptions to that rule. It's an absolute ironclad rule. Even if you're doing it for the sake of saving someone else. So it means that the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Cairo, on the one hand saw the Yerushalmi and that possibility. He understood the logic and he was there to justify that logic because you're in a suffix situation, he's in a vadei. But nevertheless, that's not codified la halacha. Let's take the Yerushalmi and put it on the back burners. Okay, Reish Lakish. Maybe Reish Lakish had a different cheshbon. You know, he was in a separate. And Rav Ami was the greatest of that generation. There were different factors, and we don't paskin la halacha based on a story in the Yerushalmi. But the Radbaz took it the whole nine yards, as we say, and he paskin that a person is not only permitted to put his life into danger and take upon himself a risk to save someone who's about to die, but he's obligated to do so, and that's why Reish Lakish did so. And we can use the story of Reish Lakish to establish normative halacha and make a decision. However, where are the majority of the poskim? Where do they belong? Do they accept the Radbaz? And according to Rav Avadi Yosef, in his famous tshuva that he wrote about Entebbe, when the government turned to him and asked, can we send Israeli soldiers into Uganda to save the hostages? So he writes about 39 pages to prove that you don't put someone's life into danger if they're not in danger, even if the other person is in such a danger. And that's not even permitted. So we end up with three possibilities here. One possibility says, don't even dream of it. Don't put your life into risk. The other possibility is to say, it's your decision. You have license to do so. The ball is in your court, as we say, proverbially. And the third opinion is that the Radbaz, you're obligated to put your life into danger to save someone else's life.
But if you have someone who doesn't know how to swim, and he's going in the water to save someone...
Right. So even the Radbaz makes it conditional on the fact that you see yourself as being capable of saving someone. If you don't know, don't jump in. Because the same undercurrent, that's why he's driving, you're gonna drown as well. And there's so many stories, I don't want to tell you stories, I mean, about people who jumped in and lost their own lives. So not only did one person perish, two people, and then a third person jumped in and three people perished. What do we gain by that? Instead of losing one life, we lost two lives and three lives. And many, many other stories. I remember when I was a youngster. I don't know, is anyone here in the audience from Brooklyn, New York? Yeah, do you remember Wallbounds? There was a Wallbounds on Ocean Avenue and Avenue V. I think it was V. Eli convicted, towards, you know, she'd say Beh, if you don't. And there was a tremendous fire. And the firefighters went in there. I think 12 firefighters lost their lives. It was in a major fire, I remember, in Waldbaum's. So that if you're going to take that decision, which might be okay, at least according to some school of thought, that you're allowed to take a risk, you better know what you're doing here. And that's why you have to take the course to be a lifesaver. Go ahead, please.
What about the fact that, you know, that the Rebbe said, Chachamim, that the law is clearly said the whole world.
That for sure should weigh in favor of the Radbaz. You're about to save the entire world, and you think you're capable of doing so. Reish Lakish is, you know, he's the muscle man, and he jumps in to save Rav Ami. But he himself admits that there's a serious possibility that he'll be killed. I mean, that was his declaration. Either they're going to kill me, or I'm going to kill them. And I'm going to jump in and fight the battle. I'm going to save the world. So morally, ethically, am I obligated to do so? And from a halachic perspective, am I permitted to do so, to take on these risks in order to save someone else's life? Rav Moshe Feinstein comes to the conclusion that we should accept la halacha, the compromise sheet, that's between the two extremes. I'm not going to accept that it's prohibited. I'm not going to accept that it's obligatory, but I'm going to accept the middle of the road. It's up to you. You have rishus, you have permission. The Torah now is going to say you're under these circumstances, for the sake of saving, you're allowed to take that risk, put your life at danger, but we're not going to obligate you to do so. But on the other hand, we have the Radbaz, who goes even a step further, and he's willing to say that you're obligated to put your life into danger to save someone else's life. Now, I want to talk to you about what's called fetal intervention. This article, which, as I told you, was authored by a pediatric surgeon, Dr. Howie Apfel. I don't know if you know him. How many people in the audience know him? I mean, he's an unusual personality. I know him more as a Talmud, but he's an unusual personality in terms of his achievements, combining Torah knowledge and the teacher of Torah on the highest level with medical expertise. And he wonders whether or not a mother who's pregnant, and the physicians tell us that the life of the fetus is in danger, but we can intervene with surgery, but it requires that she, the mother, take a risk. What is the halachic response to such a case? Now, before I get into this, I want to just read to you some of the possible benefits of this kind of a surgery. And he says the following. Let me just read it to you. There is an illness that's, again, relatively common amongst unborn babies. When I say common, it could be one in a thousand, but I mean to say it's not one in a billion, called a congenital diaphragmatic hernia, which means that there's a defect in the diaphragm which allows the contents of the abdominal cavity to enter the thorax and impede lung development. It means that this fetus is going to die because it won't have lungs to breathe oxygen. We can't live without oxygen. And it's a relatively, again, I use this term, but relatively easy kind of surgery if there was no issue about endangering the life of the mother, if we were just focused on the fetus. Another example. There is a surgery which intervenes in the cases of spinal bifida or obstructive uropathy, meaning a problem in the uterus or in the whole system of in the urological system. He talks about congenital heart disease, and there's a possibility of intervening and adding a catheter, a pacemaker. And he goes on and on with a list of, again, when I use the word common, I mean relatively common situations in the fetus in which surgery would save the life of the fetus. she would be taking a risk. If I accept the opinion of the Radbaz, then not only would she be permitted according to halacha to take the risk, she would be obligated to do so. If I take Rav Moshe Feinstein's final conclusion, as I said, Rav Avad Yosef is a little bit more conservative about it, she has the license to do so. So if you ask me on a moral, ethical level, should a pregnant mother agree to take this risk and allow the surgeon to intervene, I would say morally, she should do so. If she's permitted to do so, then she's morally obligated to do so. I can't say that if she refuses the surgery and the fetus perishes, that she has violated halacha. That chas v'shalom I wouldn't say, because there's plenty of poskim to rely on that she's not obligated to do so, and that's the final conclusion of Moshe. But if you ask me on a moral, ethical level, as a mother who's compassionate and desperately wants this fetus to survive, I would say morally, she should go for it. However, there's a big mistake here. And that's the subject that I want to talk to you about today. The entire presentation is based on one premise, and that premise is not correct. If you're talking about a life-saving situation, there's a person who's alive, who's already a nefesh. Halachically, it's a viable being. He stands on 2 feet. He got caught in an undercurrent while he was swimming. He's drowning. I am obligated to save his life, and maybe even at risk to my own life. But that's not true in the case of a fetus. The halacha does not define the fetus as a nefesh, as a live being. And therefore, to tell me that she is permitted, maybe even obligated, or at least ethically obligated, to save the baby and expose herself to risk based on halachic considerations, you have no proof to that conclusion whatsoever. And this leads me to the question of today: what is the status of a fetus? Now, this question is... Yeah, please.
Sorry.
I wish you were sitting a little closer, because it would be a lot easier to hear you. I'm going to come to you if the mountain doesn't come, because I can't. Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
They have to do something more.
More?
Because the feet, we're not allowed to abort. There's a scripture abort a baby. To abort.
Right. So what is abortion?
The fetus.
What is abortion in halacha?
The fetus is a viable.
The fetus is a viable being, and he destroys the life of the fetus. Is that murder? This is a major issue in the poskim. And it really, you know, the views of the poskim vary almost from one extreme to the other. If you have the handout that I gave you, do you have, wait, just give me 1 second, amongst the pages that I gave you, do you have pages 22 and 23? You do have that?
Yes.
And you may see a paragraph on page 22 that starts with further?
Yes.
Well, guess what? In this essay, he addresses, based on a major tshuva, this is a breakthrough tshuva of Rav Yehuda Waldenberg. He was called the Tzitz Eliezer. He wrote thousands upon thousands of tshuvas. I saw him once in my life. He died approximately, I'm guessing, maybe 20 years ago. I don't know exactly. Rav Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg. He writes in his Tzitz Eliezer that if you address the question of whether abortion is murder, does the halacha view it as murder, you will see various opinions amongst the Achronim. And our issue about whether she can, the mother in this case, place her life into danger to save the life of the fetus, or perhaps even obligated to do so, should depend upon this issue. Do we view the fetus as a nefesh, as a live being, such that if you kill the fetus, you are guilty of murder? And it's fascinating to think of the question that was raised and addressed by Rav Waldenberg. A woman was diagnosed with cancer, Nemach. She has to submit herself to treatments. The treatments are quite heavy, and it happens to be that she is pregnant. This is a risk to her life, but at the same time, there's a risk to the life of the fetus. Now watch what happens. If she continues with her cancer treatments, which she absolutely has to do, those treatments will have a negative effect on the fetus, and the life of the fetus is in danger. If, on the other hand, she discontinues her cancer treatments until she carries the baby to term, then the fetus will survive. But she's putting her life into tremendous risk. So the question was asked to Rav Waldenberg, how do we view this situation? And the answer, he says, lies in another question. What's the status of the fetus? Does the fetus have the status of a living being such that the death of the fetus is, again, if it's implemented actively, would be murder? And then what we might say to her is that she can accept upon herself a personal risk in order to save the life of the fetus, because the fetus is viewed as a nefesh. And I'll prove it to you, because aborting the fetus is murder. Says Rav Waldenberg that might be true, that the many, many poskim will see that and define abortion as murder. But he says there are many, many poskim who understand that the fetus is not considered a nefesh. And abortion is only a rabbinic prohibition. So for her to put her life in danger by terminating the cancer treatments for the sake of the fetus, when the fetus does not have the status of, because even abortion is only considered a violation of a derabbanan, she's not allowed to do so.
Doesn't it depend on the age of the fetus?
Okay, that's the question we're going to have to address in the next series. So I want to leave you in suspense so you'll come back next Wednesday. Okay? What is the age of the fetus?
Stay tuned.
But let's assume the fetus is older than 30 days. So it's 30 days past conception. The fetus is considered a nefesh. It's going to survive. But if she continues her cancer treatments, the fetus will perish. Now, in this case, Rav Waldenberg says the following. And again, this has tremendous repercussions way beyond our discussion here today. He says the following. That there are two types of taking risks. There's an active risk-taking and there's a passive risk-taking. For example, for a shlokish to jump in and fight a battle against the captors of Rav Ami, that is active risk-taking. No question about it. He's out of the risk and he's jumping into the risk. Not so in the case of treatment. Ceasing or terminating treatment is not an active risk-taking, but it's simply let nature take its course. And he wants to say that since there is a school of thought that views and defines the fetus as a nefesh, she's allowed to terminate, if she decides to do so, her cancer treatments until after birth, and then resume her cancer treatments, because the fetus is very important in halacha. The fetus is viewed as a nefesh, as a live being almost, such that abortion is considered murder according to one school of thought. And since she's not actively taking a risk, she's just being passive, the halacha changes. This would not bear on our case, because in the case in which we want to save the life of the fetus and implement fetal intervention, surgical intervention, that's already active risk-taking. The mother's situation now is that she's perfectly healthy. It's the fetus that has a problem. So for the fetal survival, do we obligate her to take this risk? That's a whole different question. Rav Waldenberg's issue was passive risk-taking. And then he was in favor of it for the sake of saving the fetus. But active risk taking? And again, we have to ask ourselves, and this is a main question, to what is this risk? In other words, how dangerous is the surgery for the mother? What are the percentages of chas v'shalom that she might perish during the, as a result of this surgery? Now, I'd like you to turn back, if you can, to page 21. And in page 21, we're going to raise the same question, but from a different perspective. What is the status of the fetus? Is the fetus considered a nefesh? And here we're going to look at it from a different perspective. And that's called pikuach nefesh. Are you familiar with the concept pikuach nefesh? Pikuach nefesh overrides the Shabbos, overrides Yom Kippur. Is the life of a fetus, if it's in peril, a nefesh, such that the law of pikuach nefesh kicks in? And we will violate the Shabbos for the sake of saving the fetus. That to me seems like the logical way of analyzing the status of the fetus. If you're going to tell me, well, we're not going to override the Shabbos for the fetus, that's not pikuach nefesh. Obviously the fetus is not a nefesh. If you're going to say we're going to violate the Shabbos for the sake of saving the fetus, it means the fetus is a nefesh. Hence it's included under the principle of pikuach nefesh. So to analyze this question, we learn a Mishnah at the end of Masechta Yoma, and the Mishnah speaks about a pregnant woman on Yom Kippur. She smells food, and she goes into some sort of a shock. She has to be fed. So there are two interpretations of that Mishnah in the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that her life is in danger. Others say the life of the fetus is in danger. According to those who say the life of the fetus is in danger, when the Mishnah paskins that we feed her, and when we feed her, you know, a whole meal on Yom Kippur, it means that the fetus comes under pikuach nefesh. So if I ask you the question, according to this opinion, we violate Yom Kippur, which is a very severe Easter, as you know, for the sake of the life of the fetus, does that answer the question that we asked? What conclusion should you derive from the fact that the life of the fetus overrides Yom Kippur? That the fetus is called a nefesh.
Excuse me, isn't that potential nefesh?
Oh, excellent point. Is it that we're violating the Shabbos because the fetus is a nefesh, or violating Yom Kippur? Or are we violating the Shabbos or Yom Kippur because we have to consider the future, and down the line the fetus will become a nefesh? And the Gemara asks, how do you know that we violate the Shabbos for the sake of a person whose life is in peril? And the Gemara offers two answers. One answer is, v'chai bohem, you should live by them, meaning the precepts of the Torah, lo she'yomos bohem. And the other answer is, mutav lechalel Shabbos achas, kidei she'yishmar Shabbos esharbe. That we're willing to forfeit one Shabbos for the sake of many Shabbosos that this individual, if we save him, will fulfill down the line. If we go with the pasuk v'chai bohem, pikuach nefesh, then we have to address the question, what is the status of a fetus? But we may be able to circumvent that entire question and say that we're going to violate the Shabbos simply because this fetus will eventually observe many, many Shabbosos. So we make we put on the scale one Shabbos versus many Shabbosos. We're willing to sacrifice the one for the sake of the many. And that means that even if I grant you that the fetus does not obtain the status of a nefesh, but since it will obtain the status of a nefesh, we're going to override the Shabbos and Yom Kippur for the future observance after the feast. Al Shema Asid, as you say very well, because of its future status. But whatever it is, we will violate Shabbos and Yom Kippur for the sake of saving the fetus. Now, is the fetus a nefesh or not? Can we come to some final conclusion? Can we sink our teeth into it? So here we have to quote a Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin on Daf Ayin Beis. The Gemara establishes that there's a law called Rodef. Rodef means that if somebody is running after someone else in order to kill him, we kill the Rodef before he gets a chance to kill the Nirdav. And the Gemara wants to know, what about a Katan? A child, a minor, below the age of 13 or 12, is running after someone to kill him. So the Gemara quotes Rav Huna. Amar Rav Huna, Katan a Rodef? Nitan latzilo benafsho. You can put the katan to death in order to save the nirdav. And this is an unbelievable chiddush. This is a revolution of Rav Huna. You know, if I have to talk about heroic tshuvas, I would put Rav Huna in the category, because what he's saying is that someone who's not responsible for their actions, there's no punishment in the Torah for a katan, never. And yet, we're going to put the katan to death. This has tremendous repercussions during the Holocaust. If you've ever heard of the various shilas that were asked to Rav Oshri, you know, the Minam HaMakim, he was one of the survivors of Auschwitz. He wrote extensively about questions that came up during the Holocaust. And there was a situation in which the Jews were hiding from the Nazis, but there was a baby, and the baby was crying. And they knew that that if we don't suffocate the baby, then they're all going to perish. Very, very profound question whether the baby is called a rodef, and the baby is certainly not responsible for its actions. And yet Rav Huna says the very fact that the katan, in this case, a minor who's not considered responsible for his actions, is endangering the life of the nirdof, we put him to death. Esve Rav Chizda Rav Huna. So Rav Chizda objects to Rav Huna, and he quotes a Mishnah in Olos. The Mishnah in Olos says the following: Yotza Rosho ain't nogim bolafisha ain't dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. The Mishnah says that when the fetus begins to emerge from his mother's womb and his head, the Gemara is going to say part of the forehead has already popped out, so to speak, and at this point the birth process is going to endanger the mother. She will not survive this birth. I mean, my eyes are full of tears. I mean, just to think about this situation, but it has happened. I don't have to tell you. So should we have now a choice? We can remain passive. She will die. The fetus will survive. Or we have to kill the fetus. And the Mishnah Paskins ain't no gimbo. We cannot destroy the life of the fetus. We have to let nature take its course, even if the mother will perish. And why? Because lefish ein dochim nefesh mipnei nefesh. We cannot take one nefesh for the sake of saving another nefesh. So Rav Chizda asks Rav Huna, am I? Why? Why can't we kill the rodev? Why can't we kill the fetus? Rodev achar chaver lahargo. He's considered a rodev. He's endangering through the birth process the life of his mother. You'll tell me he's not responsible for it, but you, Rav Huna, said that we can kill a katan even though the katan is not responsible. So the Gemara answers, shiny hustle. The case of the fetus is different. The fetus is not considered a rodev. Very difficult words of the Gemara. The Gemara says that the heavens are endangering the life of the mother. The baby is just a passive object, so to speak, that is endangering the mother. But that's not called a rodef. So I have in front of me a sefer called Chidushei Rabbeinu Chaim Halevi al Rambam. My Rebbe was Rav Soloveitchik. This is his grandfather, right? Rav Soloveitchik's father was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was the Bukhar, the firstborn to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Rav Chaim worked on this book almost tirelessly. Our Rebbe said that he rewrote it 6 different times. Every time he tried to cross out more words, because, you know, if you're a Soloveitchik, you don't want to write something and publish something and repeat yourself. So it's very challenging to try to learn this sefer. My Rebbe Rav Salvechi used to always say, "It's too bad we don't have the earlier editions of Rav Chaim when he was more meirich, you know, because then it would be a lot easier to understand it." But Rav Chaim was a perfectionist, and every word had to be justified. So he crossed out words, and this is the final draft. So Rav Chaim writes the following, and we're talking about the status of the rodev. I'm sorry, the status of the fetus. He says we have a principle called pikuach nefesh doche kol haTorah kula, and the Gemara derives that in Yuma from the pasuk v'chai bohem v'lo sheyamus bohem. And he says that who's included under v'chai bohem? Any nefesh. And anyone who's included under v'chai bohem is therefore doche, overrides all the surim of the Torah. So if you want to judge the status of a fetus in halacha, then your barometer has to be v'chai bohem. Is the fetus included v'chai bohem, and is he doche isurim? Then Reb Chaim quotes the Mishnah in Yuma, Ubra, a pregnant woman, she'richa, that she smelled this great food, is machilin osa, we can feed her on Yom Kippur, ad she'toshev nafsha. So he says the following, that Rishonim will say that for the sake of the Ubar, if the Ubar, the fetus's life is endangered by the fact that she smells these foods, then it's Doche Yom Kippur, we could override Yom Kippur. Muchrach, what we see from that, says Rav Chaim, is that the status of an ubar is that of a nefesh. If that be the case, then we understand pretty well why the Gemara says, based on a Mishnah Olos, that ain doche nefesh b'fnei nefesh. We cannot kill the ubar in order to save the mother's life, because we can't choose one nefesh over the other. We can't intervene in order to save the mother and destroy the life of the ubar, of the fetus. And Reb Chaim claims that at some point in the life of the fetus, everybody agrees that the fetus is Doche, Shabbos, and Yom Kippur. That's called the Yosheves al HaMashper. I mean, when she's in labor and she's in the throes of birth, then everybody agrees that the fetus is a nefesh, and we violate the Shabbos under V'chai Bohem. So therefore, says Reb Chaim, what happens in the case of an ubar that hasn't yet popped its head out? The Rambam says that when we learned in Olos that we have to let the birth process take its full course and we don't intervene in nature to kill the Vlad, that's only after the Vlad has popped its head out. So the Rambam writes in Perek Aleph Bilchus Rotzeach the following: Ubra shehi makasha leilet, a pregnant woman who's having tremendous trouble giving birth. Mutar lachtoch es haubar bimei'eha, we're allowed to kill the ubar while it's an ubar. The imi shahotzi rosho, but if the birth process began, then ain't no gimbo, we cannot touch the life of the ubar. Shein dochin nefesh b'fnei nefesh. We cannot snub out the nefesh of the ubar for the sake of the nefesh of the mother. But when? When does that halacha apply, says the Rambam? Only when the ubar has already been considered born. What makes it born? Again, that's the halacha. That if the head is out, then it's considered already born. And once it's born, we apply the principle of ein doche nefesh v'nei nefesh. We can't kill the ubar. But if the ubar has not yet popped its head out, it's still in its mother's womb, then the Rambam says, muto lachtocha ubar v'me'era, we're allowed to take the life of the ubar. And the Rambam adds a few words. It's as if the Uber is a rodef, and that's enough to permit us to take the life of the Uber, the fetus, in order to save the mother. So Rav Chaim asks the following question. If we're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos, we're allowed to violate the Shabbos for the sake of saving the Ubar. And certainly everybody agrees that once she's in labor, the Ubar will be Docha Shabbos, the life of the Ubar. That it means that the Ubar is considered what? Is considered a Nefesh. If that be the case, then Koshali Hadisnan, how could the Mishnah say, Chotchim es ha-Ubar, we can kill the Ubar to save the mother in Lo Yotza Rosha, but the Ubar is already in labor, he has the status of a Nefesh. And we violate the Shabbos according to everybody for the sake of the life of the Ubar. And that's our criterion at Barabbanan to establish that the Ubar, the fetus, is considered a Nefesh. So how can we kill the Ubar before birth for the sake of the mother's life? We should apply the principle of Ein Docha Nefesh B'nei Nefesh. Says Reb Chaim, that's why the Rambam was compelled to add a few words. The Rambam says that why are we allowed to kill the Ubar B'mei'eha before birth? B'neishu K'rodef Achre'eha. Because he has the status of a rodev, the only exception to the rule of Ein Docha Nefesh B'nei Nefesh, the only scenario in which the Halach allows you to take the life of one Nefesh for the sake of saving the other Nefesh, is if the Nefesh of the life of that you're taking is endangering the life of the other Nefesh. Then the Torah has made a decision that we take the life of one Nefesh, that's the Nefesh of the rodev. So the Rambam feels compelled to add something to the Mishnah. When does the Mishnah, and why does the Mishnah allow you to kill the Ubar in order to save the mother's life? Because the Ubar is a rodev. Says Reb Chaim, I don't understand. If you kill the Uber because the Uber is a rodev, then even when it pops its head out and it has the status of what? Of a full viable being of an Efesh, we should still take the life of the Uber to save the mother. The Uber is a rodev. There's a contradiction here in the Rambam. On the one hand, we understand very well why the Rambam was compelled to introduce the concept of a rodev here, because otherwise we've already established that the fetus has the status of a nefesh, because with Docha Shabbos, at least when she's Yosheves al Mashbir in labor, then we have a problem here which the Rambam has to address. Why do we kill the Ubar to save the mother, and we cut it out of its mother's womb to save the mother? Well, Ein Docha Nefesh B'nei Nefesh. The answer is Rodev. That's the only way the Rambam could justify that we take the life of the Ubar to save the mother. Well, I have news for you. You're in trouble now, because if you're going to tell me that the reason why we take the life of the Ubar to save the mother is because the Ubar is a Rodev, then even after the Ubar pops its head out and it's a full-fledged Nefesh, the law is that we take the life of one Nefesh, that's the Nefesh of the Rodev, to save and spare the life of the other Nefesh, which is the Nirdav. So in order to understand this, Reb Chaim introduces a whole new concept. Pretty way out. He says what we have to logically or mathematically derive from this. I'm reading Reb Chaim. This is Reb Chaim's own writings here. You know, this is not, you know, there are a thousand things that people say in the name of Reb Chaim, but this is Reb Chaim's own pen after he edited it six times. Says Reb Chaim, Muchach mizeh, the Be'emes, Afal gavdi mishamayim karat filei michomakom lo pokamei ubar etzem din rodev. He says the following, that there are two categories of rodev. There's one full-fledged rodev who is guilty, he is deliberate, he is a potential murderer, and he has a chiyuv of a rodev. He has to be put to death. No ifs, no ands, and no buts. I mean, you can shoot for the legs, that's something different. But if there's no way of saving the nidaf unless you kill the rodef, the rodef is responsible. But then there's another situation where a person is not delivered as a rodef, just the very essence of his physical being is endangering the life of someone else. That person is included in the din of rodef, but does not have the status of a chiyuv rodef. Now, what's the difference between someone who's a full-fledged rodef, he's deliberate, and he has the law and the status of a chiyuv rodef, and someone who only has a din rodef? What's the difference? If you tell him he has a din rodef, it means you can put him to death. And he says, the nafkamina, the difference is, with regard to the principle of ein dochin nefesh b'pnei nefesh. When the principle of ein dochin nefesh b'pnei nefesh applies, then we need a chiyuv rodef. It's not enough to say that one nefesh endangers the life of the other. We need some sort of deliberate action on that person's part. It's not some sort of natural process that takes place. And therefore, in the case of the fetus that's popped its head out and is considered a full-fledged nefesh, at this point, you ask yourself the question, is the fetus chayav as a rodef? And the answer is, it's not chayav on the rodef because this is a natural process. And therefore, we apply the principle of ein dochin nefesh b'nei nefesh. Avol mikol makom, nevertheless, the din rodef still applies to the fetus. And therefore, we look at the ubar in its mother's womb, and we say that the ubar, listen carefully, is not a nefesh gomur. In other words, it is a nefesh, and it has the status of a nefesh to be docha Shabbos, but it's missing a little bit. There are a couple of inches. It's like 90% of a nefesh, but not 100%. And he calls it a nefesh eino gomur. It's not a complete nefesh. And what's the difference? If it's not yet a complete nefesh, then it doesn't size up to the status of the mother who's a complete nefesh. And that discrepancy between the status of a nefesh eino gomur in the case of the fetus before it's born, and that of the mother as a nefesh gomur is going to allow you to apply the din rodef, not the chiyuv rodef. Because again, the fetus is never chayav as a rodef because there's no deliberate, it's only the process of birth. But nevertheless, it is included in the general din rodef. And what it allows me to do is take the halacha of ein dofu nefesh b'nei nefesh and make a decision through the parasha of rodef that we're going to sacrifice the life of a nefesh eino gomur in the case of the fetus for the sake of a nefesh gomur in the case of the mother. So we now have two sets of halachas according to Reb Chaim. We have one halacha that the fetus in its mother's womb is not a complete nefesh, and therefore we're allowed to make that decision and intervene to save one nefesh, namely the nefesh gomur of the mother, even at the expense of the nefesh eino gomur of the fetus. Then we have a different din, that once the fetus pops its head out, then the full-fledged ein dochin nefesh b'nei nefesh applies. And you may ask me, well, what about the din rodef? The answer is there's no din rodef in the sense of a chiyuv rodef, because this is the birth process and the child is in no way deliberate about endangering the life of its mother. This is the natural birth process. Now let's apply, in the 5 minutes that we have left, the Reb Chaim's breakthrough to the case of fetal intervention. We have the situation where a mother is pregnant, she's fine and well, but the fetus's life is in danger. She has a problem, because if she agrees and submits herself to the surgical procedure, she is endangering her life. It's a risk-taking. And not only is it a risk-taking, it's an active risk-taking. So we cannot apply the breakthrough tshuva of Rabbi Eliezer Valdemar, the Tzitz Eliezer. Is she allowed to put her life into danger? Is she obligated to put her life into danger and actively take a risk for the sake of the ubar? And the answer is, it depends on the status of the ubar. Now the Reb Chaim has told us that until the ubar pops its head out, it has the status of a nefesh eino gomur. Would that status allow her to take a risk? And it all depends upon the following. If we take a look at the ubar and analyze its status from the perspective of pikuach nefesh, then certainly, according to all the Rishonim, if The ubar is in an advanced stage of its development. Again, we have to define that. Then it's a nefesh. It's not a nefesh goer until it pops its head out, but it's a nefesh to override the Shabbos. Is that enough to override the iser of taking a risk? If on the other hand you were analyzing the status of the ubar, b'mei imah, the fetus before it pops its head out, from the perspective of ein dochin nefesh b'mei nefesh, and you would ask the question, can we take the life of the fetus to save the life of the mother? The answer is the fetus is not a full life. It's a nefesh ein gomor. So we're gonna override the principle of ein docha nefesh b'nei nefesh, because we're gonna take a hierarchy of nefesh. And on the hierarchy of nefesh, the nefesh of an ubar falls short of that of the nefesh of gomor of the mother in this case. So that we can override the Shabbos because of this status of a nefesh. In other words, it's true that the, you know, if the, let's say, you know, on a count from zero to 100, you know, to override the Shabbos, what it's called?
Scale.
A scale, excellent. I was missing the word scale. On a scale from zero to 100, if you have to pass the 50-yard line, then and to be considered a nefesh to be included, because nefesh can override the Shabbos, the fetus is already 51. Maybe it's even 91. But if you ask me the question, is it reached 100? And if we compare that nefesh to a nefesh gomor, the answer is it falls shy of 100. And that's why we don't apply the principle of ein docha nefesh with nefesh as long as the baby hasn't popped its head out and will take the life of the fetus to save the mother. But now the question is, when the mother takes a risk in our life by submitting to this fetal surgery to save the fetus from death, in all those diseases that we mentioned before, can we permit her to do so for the sake of a nefesh ein gomor? And the answer, I believe, is that if this nefesh ein gomor is docha Shabbos, then it also could be docha this prohibition of risking your life. And again, as we discussed at great length, Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva is that a person is allowed to put his life into risk to save the nefesh. So if we have a nefesh as far as Hilchas Shabbos is concerned, and we can be docha Shabbos for the sake of the nefesh, then that's enough of a nefesh to override the risk taking. So Mirz Hashem, next week, again, I want to keep you in suspense so that you'll come again. We'll try to, you know, again, at 9:15, I mentioned it last week that this Wednesday is going to be at 9:15, and it'll be 9:15 for the next three Wednesdays. That's what they tell me. I didn't make the rules. And Amir Hashem, I'll see you next week, and we'll try to wrap this up. But now, at least, we have the basic conceptual framework, and we can begin to analyze this question: can a woman, a mother, put her life into danger? Would she be obligated to put her life into danger to submit herself to this fetal intervention in order to save the life of the fetus? Okay, then? And with that, I will bid you all a great day and a great week, and I'll see you with Hashem next week.
I read the note. I thought it said that Anthony wasn't here. Oh. You were going to be 11:15, or Alan was going to be 11:15. Because I really love the time that I'm away. I'm in London the next 2 weeks.
Oh, no. So you won't be able to be.
What would be then? Okay, the status. I understood even the last 5 minutes.
If somebody would be kind enough just to open up the door. Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, because if I don't want to interfere with, you
if
know, the next.
If the baby really pops its head out and still is, it's a road date. If that baby pops its head out, it becomes a full nefesh. So then the question is nefesh and nefesh. So what happens there?
So in that case, we have to decide whether there's a chiyuv road date.
Right. So
and since it's min hashamayim karadfi, this is part of the natural process, Reb Chaim claims there's no chiyuv road date.
Right.
So in order to decide between two equal nefashos,
right,
and make that call, you know, yeah, and decide in the scales who gets priority.
Yeah.
We can only do so with a chiyuv rodeh, and it's not enough to have a din rodeh. You need a deliberate intention to place someone else's life into danger.
And so what is the status of the baby?
Since Mishamayim Karatfi, the baby is a dinrod. If has a dinrod, that's not enough.
But he's not a chiyuv rov.
And he has no chiyuv rov. But before it pops itself, then we're only interested in nefesh, and then we can take a scale.
Wonderful.
And that's a dinrod. That's her kind. I mean, it's very profound.
Yeah, very. It's wonderful. Last week she was just wonderful. I loved it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I sent it over to my kids on Shabbos.
Oh, great. Recently the name Shatzkis came up. I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly which Shatzkis, but probably it's a relative of yours.
Well, my father, my grandfather.
No. I mean, a youngster. Someone who's learning in yeshiva or something.
Well, my grandson was in Vassar, but he also died.